2001.
I will let Mr. Warner or
just for your information, committee members and public members, we are going to take bills in the following order. We are going to do 3554
on the first bill.
We're going to do 3556 second.
First one is
we're going to be entering about 30 minutes for two of us together to be, and they'll be done. 3540 will be third.
Administration of the senior.
And I figure about an hour for that. And then 3524 will be last, and then we will work section 2163 and 3882
measures
end of the meeting. So if you're wondering where you're going to fall in the scope of things, that's where it's at. Okay, with that, I'm going to open another hearing on House Bill 3564.
This is part of a bigger issue in terms of property tax relief. And one thing you'll recall from the output of OTIM that we looked at
$25,000
is the property tax.
From the general fund, the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for the construction of the Mid-Columbia Veterans Memorial Complex in the Dow.
So those are issues where we've got a number of bills that are like this that we deal with property tax relief. Then we have Senate Bill 555, which deals with long-term insurance. Issue that
Smith is
a follow-up to a bill that
does
last section.
Did you want to go down there and talk, or did you want to talk to me?
A tax credit for long-term care insurance, looking forward prospectively.
Thank you, Chair Cromwell.
But did not allow those that already had insurance policies.
I brought at the request of people from the Dow, who are here to testify on behalf. It is for the Veterans Memorial in the Dow. It is a great project.
I also have Senate Bill 909, which
have a handout, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, you have agreed.
If there's anything we can do in this country to show honor for those who have served, I think we should do it. It's a good role for good government. So with that, I would ask you to...
Let's take care of some of the housekeeping issues first.
Okay, if I can have Rob Van
Cleve, literally have hearing. The testimony is not ready yet, but if we hold the hearing, then we can hold on to the bill. This was brought by Senator Atkinson, and it does, in fact, have a pretty significant potential impact on seniors. So we do want to keep the bill alive in our committee. I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 477.
Whatever order you want to go in, and
your president
whenever you're ready, thank you.
Anyone signed up for 477?
Good morning. My name is Rob Van Cleve. I'm here at the
We'll ask Senator Atkinson to exercise due diligence and bring testimony to support the bill. No change in the admonition that we have to be timely in our consideration. Schedule for this committee and others in our process is to close issues that you wish to have brought before the committee to make sure that you contact us.
We want to thank you for the opportunity to visit with you this morning.
We have also a bill that is Senate Bill 909 that
5,000 veterans who live in the Mid-Columbia area.
Put on our agenda this morning. I agree with the Senator George, who has brought this bill. Move it to his committee.
Very important.
Like bring on it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Which committee would that be?
That's the
Transportation Committee. Mr. Chairman, Commission, we would like to take a
I'm really surprised, Mr. Chair, if we've got this time crunch, why we're moving an OLCC bill to transportation.
And actually, many are surprised that we have an OLCC bill here in the revenue that hasn't been heard by the government committee first. We will move it over to the government committee.
Hispanic American War, which and proudly and, sending our sons
we'll
and daughters
subsequent
to foreign lands to serve and protect our
nation
and freedom. It is with this proud tradition of service and sacrifice in mind that we feel a responsibility to recognize and honor those veterans who have made that ultimate sacrifice. This project is the construction of two new monuments
this is one that
to honor the men and women from the Mid-Columbia who have served our country in times of war and times of peace. These monuments were placed adjacent to our Vietnam
sale of alcohol,
which was constructed approximately 15 years ago.
There is,
our goal
this is a pretty
is ultimately
big
create a memorial complex.
I would suggest that a
place of reflection
with
our veterans
and their
families.
The product.
With your help, this project will be completed and dedicated on the 4th of July.
If it did have a strip out of the
but to do that, we need your help.
Come back
and we need your support.
Because it will have
first monument will be a monument to a very
well, I hope we don't waste too much time on this.
A man honored by
let's open the public hearing. Possible work session on Senate Bill
Military Honor,
909.
The Congressional Medal of Honor.
The chair will entertain a motion to refer this bill to the
served in the United States Army during World War II, and served again during the Korean War. According to the citation, he displayed dauntless courage and resolute and intrepid leadership. For his actions on that day,
the environment that 909 be moved to
only
the Committee on Transportation
in the
and
country,
Government
with
a subsequent referral to Senate.
It is our understanding
that I've got a protocol here
to receive the Medal of Honor.
I think we reported it out.
Old Lemming okay. Family sister who lives in Milwaukee.
Okay, we're reporting that with our
recommendation. But she did say that when Warren was growing up,
any questions about
all he ever wanted to do
was
I object to the motion.
An objection to the motion. Let's call the roll.
The second monument will be in honor of all
yeah,
men and the women.
Crazy. This is this whole thing of, you know, not to play the veto game with the governor, but we still want to do these kind of bills.
No. This monument will honor those who served in Spanish
that's
and
one of the
World
bills.
War,
World
War II, the Korean War, the
no.
Cold War, Vietnam, and Desert Storm. In addition, to the veteran of the intent to also honor the citizens of the country
no.
For example, a farmer
yes.
In Sherman County
aye.
Who was told they needed to stay home and feed the troops and feed the nation, and that's how
aye.
They could serve their country.
Motion passes. We have made our referral out.
And
close the work
home, maintain the business.
Public hearing on
they also deserve recognition during these
Senator.
Times.
I'm afraid we're not having much of an impact.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee.
Senator Mills, I believe that it's that of the Senator's ultimate professionality. Also, it shows the relative importance of the body to people outside.
Outside.
Colleagues, what now?
My purpose
let's do,
today is to reiterate why Wasco County and the Midland is asking for your assistance. As you will see in the document that you've been handed, we're asking for just a minute portion of the total cost of this project. Wasco County has stepped up to the plate to show our support of veterans in the past.
Good morning.
And we haven't done it just for the veterans of the Mid-Columbia.
I'll
and you have
Dennis
to all be well aware that Wasco County's 22,000 citizens
backgrounder on Senate Bill 469
$1 million the state of Oregon's portion to build the Oregon Veterans Home in our community.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, this is the bill that we heard last time dealing with the senior deferral program, and the Department of Revenue is ready to discuss some of the things that they see in the bill that they can do administratively.
Okay. And let's.
If I may ask you to turn.
I wonder aloud why haven't we done
that?
Let's go ahead and open the public
memorial.
Hearing on Senate Bill 4.
The community fundraising
and we'll bring
budget.
Forward
the
John Phillips
Department
of Revenue.
This is a brief overview of the cost of the project and our efforts to raise the funds for that project.
Good morning, Mike. Another guy up, Mr. Chair.
It's a $200,000 project.
It just caused a lot of confusion.
We've raised $25,000.
On the other hand,
today.
We're moving that county up to Washington anyway and redistricting, so don't worry.
Just keep them quiet. This discussion
will $1,000 locally for a total of
this colleague, as you remember, was a bill brought by Senator Gary Holy. Assumed that there would be no change without legislation.
And we have
to coincide the deferral process.
Congressman Walden,
disabled
and
seniors,
and
what in fact has happened is
drafting an appropriation
staff has shown up with the solution to our problem. Let's go ahead and what is the solution to our
build this project?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. Shirley Leeper, a former specialist in the Senior Deferral Program. We did meet after this bill and talked with the chair and outlined in the information that's being passed out to you right now some of the things we're doing in the program already. And we think that the kinds of things we're doing address the streamlining issues that the bill attempts to encourage, and I can go through each of the steps or at your wish, whichever you have me do.
I would appreciate just a recap of what it is that we're doing to make this referral program more accessible to the next page to seniors and the disabled, and add it as a group of folks that can apply for deferral.
You'd be happy to do that. What we're currently doing, and just a reminder, the senior deferral program was there was a disabled component added last session, and it's typical of most sessions that there's a change, and sometimes a significant change to the senior deferral program each session. So each session, we're rethinking the program, and we're re-looking at it, we're seeing what we can do to streamline it, and we end up doing that each session. Because of changes, which are good, but it just gives us another opportunity to rethink it. So some of the things we're doing are we're continuing things that we have been doing relative to public education. We do go out and speak at every opportunity we get. We work with the media in making releases so that seniors are aware of the program, aware of the changes. We also provide assistance to Senior and Disabled Services Program with the Department of Human Resources, the case managers there. We work very closely with them. And there are local organizations, we refer to the gatekeeper organizations, provide sort of a menu of options for seniors, and we work with them in providing information about our senior and disabled program to that organization that helps seniors directly. We have set up a website that is available to search information about that program, and there was a question asked about the size and type of that program, and we looked up the website information, and it is alterable in terms of the font size and, you know, making it 120% or whatever so that the print is large enough for them to read. We have an email address specifically for them. We set up voicemail boxes, and we have a 1-800 telephone number, fax number, and email address. We are working on other changes that we haven't accomplished yet. Some of those are relative to the form itself, which the bill spoke to. What we tried to do in the bill, on the form, is to rethink what we need to accomplish approval or denial of the application. We have some things we're seriously considering and just haven't got them off the form yet are the driver's license number, and there's a list on page 2, attaching the income tax information, power of attorney document, and some other things. Right now, the form requires about one quarter of it completed by the senior, and the rest the senior then gives to the county assessment and tax office. They process some information and then forward it on to us. So there is a very, very small portion on the form, about equal to the information, not exactly, but about equal to the information that the bill is seeking to reduce the form to. So we think we're getting there. There are some system changes also that we've been working with, and
to our community, to our state, to this great nation.
Maybe Shirley can speak to that.
Especially for your support.
Mr. Chairman and committee, for the record, my name is Shirley Leeper with the Department of Revenue Deferral Unit.
Are there any questions?
Some of the things that we're working on changing and some of the things we've already changed as technology has been available to us is we use the internet to search vital records so we can determine if a taxpayer has deceased or not. That streamlines the process and not having to send out letters or make additional telephone calls trying to locate some of these people. We have added or in the process of adding information onto the department's 1-800 voice information so people can call in and get individual information on the programs. We have created an FTP site for our exchange of information between the counties to streamline our exchange of data there in our payment process. And we did a test on that last year. This year it will be fully implemented for every county to take advantage of that.
Various other donations.
We have added, as John said, an email system out there, and the counties can also send us their information email, or they even get an option of using a CD in addition to the FTP sites this year. So we're constantly looking at what technology has changed and how can we better work the program and be more efficient that way. we are looking at reprogramming the database to search for the property by address. So if someone calls in and they do not have the account number or possibly the correct name of the taxpayer or social security number, we can then look at a database for the actual address. And so we're looking at that to see if we can accomplish that. And presently, each county sends us a listing after the payments are made of the accounts we paid on and the current address they're showing. We're looking to see if there's a way we can take information from the county and match that against our system. So that's something we're going to be looking at here in the next year also. So those are some major things we're looking at right now.
One of the goals of the program staff is to return phone calls within 2 hours to anybody calling in. So we receive a large number of phone calls from seniors. In fact, the furniture system planning committee is considering installing 7-foot cubicle walls because the volume of the conversation between our staff and seniors is so loud. Due to the, you know, inability to hear sometimes, and we're raising our voices to communicate with them, and we do have a lot of good communication. We have people in that unit that are very sensitive to the elderly and the concerns there, and they're taking it very seriously.
They have an Alzheimer's wing.
One thing I might ask or point out is that part of what happens every session, as I mentioned, is that the program there's some rethinking going on with the program, and that's not unlike this session. And on the final page, I listed some of the bills, and it's not complete. There's two bills that I was unaware of that found out this morning.
There was a few years ago,
to add to this list that would change the program. So
there was an opportunity.
I just ask for your consideration when these bills come through. Some of them will be starting in the House, obviously, and have already been heard over there. That the various age thresholds, the various income thresholds, and the various qualifications for the programs and the funding mechanisms. In terms of streamlining, it helps us if these different concepts are thought of as one policy decision and helps us, you know, so that we don't reprogram quite as frequently, and that's money for the program. I might add one addendum to all that in addressing Senator Minnis's question. His question at the last hearing was about volunteers. And we did have quite a number of emails about that, various people, including our personnel office and our income tax section and Shirley's unit. And we contacted other agencies to find out their use of seniors and volunteers. And we do and have in the past used students. Student workers in the program, and as of recently, because of such a large change in the program from last session, adding the disability, we discontinued that temporarily. We were having up to 3 part-time workers in the program, and we replaced those 3 with 1 full-time worker just because we didn't know the program. It's changing, and so training someone on the program we didn't know and then trying to do the work was not productive. So we may be going back to that kind of a concept. Except that right now we're sort of in the bringing the program up mode. We do work with AARP and the tax aid program on the income tax side, and volunteers are taken in and trained, and then they're helping elderly and other people to fill out their tax forms. So we do use that within the department. Just wanted to
thank you.
Anything else we can answer?
Okay. Any other comments?
Go back to memory what we were talking about last time. It seemed like one of the concerns that I had was the confusion for seniors. One was the annual filing. It seems like you're saying that you could eliminate that. And is that something you could do administratively or do you need statutory authority?
Maybe sure we could address that.
Chairman and Senator Byers, there is no annual filing requirement at this time. That bill had it so that the annual statement would have to be returned, and we have not required that to happen. We take care of that in other modes so that we don't have the confusion out there with them having to return that, because a lot of them, we figured about 30% would not return it, and that would have taken a manual process to contact them.
So the way it works now is the person files once, determined eligible, and they don't know if they're eligible. They're assumed to continue to be eligible unless they be
Well, they did change of income, or if they are disqualified for death, moving, whatever. But we get a lot of that information from the counties. But they do, they just file once, and they are not required to file an income tax return unless they're over the threshold.
Did you want to make a comment about it?
Good question. Sometimes the best deal is no deal at all. I think this focuses on the senior tax deferral program. I really appreciate the fact that now the agency's been focused on the issue and asked to sort of stand and deliver what their plan is for making this happen. It's on the public record. I have no question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
outline that you've given us for the existing changes.
I would love to have the committee join us in Moscow County to view the memorial.
The detail of your testimony this morning will occur. The reason I'm certain of that is that actually there's two reasons I'm certain of that. One is that this is the committee that their legislative oversight over the
I'm sorry, thank you. I don't do this regularly.
And all of this John Mogran, Moscow County Judge.
And I was thinking, as I was coming up here, if we do this were being held in my hearing room, we'd all have a lot more fun.
Smooth blending of these two programs into one. And I'm also going
thank
to attach
you, Representative Smith,
this
for,
testimony to
the memo on our
Senator who is the person who's in charge of the single most powerful committee in the legislature, which is the benchmark committee.
what I have found is under the ORS heading of miscellaneous provisions relating to the transfer of
interim and social
donation
to make sure
of public lands,
that
ORS 271.3
I think that's the best thing that we can do is put this in the bill.
Any political subdivision or bill that's changed to
vacate. It's not unusual for members to their own bill, and that's probably what we ought to do in this case. But I think this is a good day's work in terms of letting folks know. There's a new deferral program
goes
for
on and describes the method
and seniors,
of
and that
property
this now will be a much smoother, much easier, and in the future, a lot more convenient method
you get
than to
up to ORS 275-030.
Mr. Chair, that would be sort of like an 11th amendment to the Department of Revenue,
which is, thou shalt do what they said, thou shalt do.
County governing body,
exactly right.
Provided.
Good. I like theology.
Excuse me, I missed this. The county governing body may, whenever it deems it could be in the best interest of the county to do
we'll,
so.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing, and in all likelihood, colleagues, this is the last.
And then it goes on and prescribes what amounts to a sheriff's auction on the courthouse steps.
We have before us Senate Bill 555.
You know, my first reaction was
I would like the
staff to
kind of make a brief presentation about what this bill does.
City school board.
It's an entirely serious question and issue about whether or not folks will have equity on those policies that were issued before January 1st, 2000. But let's go ahead and have the
orientation again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 555 expands eligibility for the current long-term care insurance tax credit to include premiums paid on long-term care insurance policies issued prior to January 1, 2000. In the original legislation, House Bill 2080, which was passed in 1999, the credit was limited to policies issued on or after January 1, 2000. The original version of the bill considered wider eligibility, but mainly for revenue impact reasons, it was trimmed. And in the final version of the bill, the credit was available only for policies issued on or after January 1, 2000.
acquired by foreclosure or tax
this,
forfeiture.
This change would become effective in the current 2001 tax year. 271.
The reason this came to light, just so you know, I have two pieces of property.
So the general revenue
that we would like to do something with. One is we deeded back in the 40s
ahead of us
to the military department for armory. And
do we have an idea of what the new armory
and that property will revert back to the county under revision clause? Well, it's in the 40s, it was way out in the country and had virtually no value. Now it's a very valuable piece of
property. We do, Mr. Chair, the impact of Senator 1999 House Bill 2080 was estimated to be $200,000 in the 9901 biennium, and about double that, $455,000
in 2001-2003. If I'm allowed to do that, but because
that was the impact of limiting it to new
for a long term is conveying that property. I'm prohibited from doing that. That would be in the best interest of the county to be able to deal that property that way. The other piece of property is a piece of property that is acquired as a gift
what we did
to develop as park space down in the Pine Hollow area. We don't have a park department. Our budget is slim. We don't have the money to develop a park. Pine Hollow has a non-profit corporation that acts as their fire department. The piece of property is about a 5
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am
now, if I were to
not
that
personally
off,
aware of those circumstances, steps, although
would be snapped up by the
that would be possible.
That, and they would outbid anything with a small the fire department
well,
could do. But the fire department has volunteered
I'll bring
to say,
forward
if we can build a
Mr.
fire
Daniel,
station on a corner of the county,
county
maybe
here representing
an acre or a third.
We'll open the Senate hearing
or something like that.
555.
We will then, with our volunteers,
Daniel.
Develop the
well,
rest of the property.
Do you wish free reinforcements
as it was
with you?
No,
I thought
that. They can't do that again with a
you're welcome,
month-to-month lease.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. I'll give you a little bit about my background so you know
and again,
where I'm coming from a little bit.
Property,
excuse me, I've got a master's degree in business, an accounting degree. I've been practicing in the field of accounting since 1982, primarily in the area of taxation. I've taught business, taxation, and economics courses at community college level since 1982. I'm presently an elected member of the Board of Astoria Commission. Also currently a member of the Investment and Budget Committees of the Astoria Senior Center. Belong to several military organizations such as the American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, and Retired Officers Association. So I am familiar with some of the political ramifications of bills. I'm familiar with the needs of seniors and also the economic and tax aspects of this bill. I was the one that asked that the bill be introduced.
I don't know that I have a
as was stated, current legislation allows tax credit only for policies initiated after January 1st of the year 2000.
It does need to be changed to allow me
it was
to
a measure to minimize
the carry the title county
tax impact of such a tax credit. I realize
an exclusive
there are
to
some
government.
Problems,
so,
though. One of the problems is that
have to seek other
in some cases, an individual will go out and get a new policy, thus qualifying with the new policy while the old policy would not qualify. I have one tax client who did that this year
and had worked for it.
And the bigger problem is
that, has offered this
that
language,
for many people who would apply for a new policy, the premiums would be higher on the new policy than the old because the person is now older and they also have some medical problems. So in that particular case, the increased premiums might be more than
the
potential tax saving by changing policies. An even more serious problem is a situation where a person cannot get a new policy. I had an individual call me I guess it was Saturday,
have you had a chance
stating that he felt that he was being discriminated against. He was over 80 years old. It was suggested to him by one of his representatives that he get a new policy. He contacted the insurance company and said, no, you're too old to get a new policy. That doesn't affect the revenue aspect per se, but I think what we're going to see is that there are going to be some people that purchase policies for over a period of time. Their income may well go down, and they may not be able to afford the policies anymore without some type of assistance, such as this tax credit. And for every person who drops a policy, you're creating a fiscal liability down the road. So, I am familiar with some of the political ramifications of bills. I'm familiar with the needs of seniors and also the economic and tax aspects of this bill. I was the one that asked that the bill be introduced.
Senate Bill 180.
As was stated, current legislation allows tax credit only for policies initiated after January 1st, the year 2000. It was a measure to minimize the tax impact of such a tax credit, I realize. There are,
for the record,
some
chair,
problems.
You know,
one of the problems is that in some cases, an individual will go out and get a new policy, thus qualifying the new policy while the old policy would not qualify. I have one tax client who did that this year. A bigger problem is that for many people who would apply for a new policy, the premiums would be higher on the new policy than the old because the person is now older and may also have some medical problems. So in that particular case, the increased premiums might be more than potential tax saving by changing policies. An even more serious problem is a situation where a person cannot get a new policy. I had an individual call me, I guess it was Saturday, stating that he felt that he was being discriminated against. He was over 80 years old. Was suggested to him by one of his representatives that he get a new policy. He contacted the insurance company and said, no, you're too old to get a new policy. That doesn't affect the revenue aspect per se, but I think what we're going to see is that there are going to be some people that purchase policies for over a period of time. Their income may well go down, and they may not be able to afford the policies anymore without some type of assistance, such as this tax credit. And for every person who drops a policy, we're creating a fiscal liability down the road because the taxpayers of the state of Oregon may eventually have to pick up funding for the care of these people who no longer feel they can afford the insurance. So we've got a situation where right now we save a little bit as far as tax expenditures are concerned. Down the road, maybe we're requiring a much larger liability through the short-term savings. It's also a matter of equity. It's hard to say, hard for me to say what the actual tax impact would be, other than that this credit is a maximum of $500 per year for tax returns, whether it be an individual tax return or a joint tax return. In order to get the full credit, this individual, this couple, would have to be paying premiums in excess of $3,333 per year in premiums. It's been my experience, the people I've talked to, that most people don't fall in this high category. In the case of my wife and myself, the tax credit that we would obtain with our current policy if we were qualified would be $330 a year rather than the $500. I've got a tax client, her savings, the person who went out and got a new policy, $440 in a tax credit. So this is pretty well the background. I've given you about the same information in this handout. So we're talking about a minimum loss of current tax revenue. We're talking about the possibility of a larger liability in the future on the part of the state, and also we're talking about a certain degree of equity. So that's, oh, one other thing. This morning I received a document from the Medicaid Long-Term Care Quality and Reimbursement Advisory Council. It was addressed to Oregon legislators, and it says the council unanimously opposes proposed budget because they believe that it would result in grave trauma for thousands of elderly and disabled Oregonians, and this decimate the Oregon long-term care system. It also mentions Oregon long-term care system is in a crisis, experiencing great difficulty in recruiting and maintaining staff. And finally, the failure to reimburse nursing home rates would cause additional closures and result in trauma for clients as well as their families. So we're already in a situation where the state is providing some of this long-term care because people don't have personal assets or an insurance policy to cover the situation. So that is the end of my testimony.
Thank you very much. I think you've given us a good overview.
Thank you very much.
Senator George, when we opened the public hearing, you were conducting legislative business. Would you like to orient the committee to your contention and bring
you to that? Well, you probably heard, you did just hear from the person who brought this to me. And the concern here is what are we going to do with the idea being is that maybe there's a way to give incentive to that person to provide their own. And as you just heard, if we don't do that, we have the implication that that person will be so that's the idea behind the bill, and I really appreciate having the bill at least heard, and kind of shocked that we see the fiscal impact of it.
Open the hearing on Senate Bill 133.
Put this in our portfolio of consideration as to what we're going to do about the issue of health care.
Well, Senator George, your question that you just raised about the relative size of the fiscal impact is one of the in discussing with our certifiably smart folks who are our staff for our committee. And, maybe we should talk a little about how the fiscal impact.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bethany Johnson.
The testimony
I'm
the representative
from House District 1.
If an individual
I'm here today on behalf of the constituent, Mr. Kim Johns. Mr. Johns owns a company in St. Helens that makes ballistic dry suits
and, that seems to be
for the federal government. He has contracts with the Marines, the Coast Guard. He is a GSA contract supplier, which means that he provides
of the committee.
Dry suits,
revenue impact
the
is based on
agencies,
some
including
national
the
data and some sharing out of that and
national
Morgan data.
Felon.
We identified approximately 30,000 policies in Oregon.
Of the product that he now
average long-term care premium
I have,
was about $1,300 per year,
as well as worked with
increasing at a fairly steep rate.
The amendments that you have
and
supported.
That would make the average credit,
the company
at least in the beginning, around
$170
per year,
with $3 million in revenue coming into our community.
Since
1985, Mr. Johns has been
so this revenue impact
citizen.
Is based on about 30,000 policies and growing.
He has enlisted the support of Senator Gordon Smith, Congressman David Wu, our sheriff, the military department, and a number
so
of others seeking presidential relief from his conviction. He was appointed by Secretary Pence to a district
members,
court council where he served as vice president and is in the middle of a four-year term. I'm hopeful that you will consider these amendments to Senate Bill 133.
three.
We have a dynamic model here. It isn't just an aggregate of $500 for all of the folks that might have. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had the next one on question about how many taxpayers apply and qualify, and some assumptions about what their tax liability would be, assumptions about what their long-term care premiums would be, and then we built a model to try and
balance the gratitude and her staff was outstanding in helping me get the gratitude to meet Senator Menendez.
Year and then 10.4.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm sort of looking back when we passed the 99-2080
Act.
The estimated impact was $200,000
for fine right there.
Thank you very
much.
That was just looking at
colleagues. I brought this bill at the request of two outstanding police officers in my district. One from Glassstone and one from Morgan City, Frank Grace from Glassstone.
There's
Rada, who's here Thursday from Morgan City.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee.
But,
we assume that
this,
there are about 1,500 LLCs added per year.
Safer from being caught in crossfire.
About 30,000.
And it will also make the job of our public safety officer a little bit safer. When a felon, Don, or somebody who intends
the estimate underlying the House Bill 2080 from last session
to go out on
covering the new policies only
thing,
was that about
1,500
policies would be added in the first year, and that would increase at a rate of about
in the act of trying to apprehend them
5% per year beyond that.
Increases the likelihood that the criminal will not make it into all of the
how many of those
there's going to be a gun battle. So this bill is a good public safety bill, and I'm asking
Senator
for consideration
no,
of it.
We didn't feel we were able to make an estimate like that.
Are there any questions for Representative Wong?
I believe it was the original intention, was expressed by the figures that worked on this bill originally, that this credit be offered as an incentive for people buy policies who didn't deserve it,
the three of them are coming forward.
We need people. I guess following along under fire's line.
Oh, sure. That's fine. Then, Mr. Rada, would you mind waiting just briefly?
We must have looked at the potential savings social systems or social systems in Oregon generated by having folks acquire long-term.
Good morning. Who would like to begin?
I'll begin, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pam Christian. I'm employed by the Judicial Department. I work for the State Court Administrator, administering the Indigent Defense Service Division. We're here this morning on the -85 amendments to Senate Bill 133.
Of how those issues were dealt with in the previous
require mandates that local public safety coordinating councils establish what are commonly referred to as early disposition programs. Early disposition programs primarily are geared toward lower-level first offense misdemeanors and probation violations. We'll be hearing from Lane County
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not able to
tell
exactly what
originated
the
early disposition programs in Lane County in the
1980s.
The program
I think
we
one of the problems
with
it is that
our model
the benefits are
the -85 amendments would
so
provide
the savings would come about
criteria
and the
broad purposes rather for the local public safety coordinating council to develop early disposition programs. The amendment then, -85 amendment then amends existing law with regard to criminal arraignments and also probation violations so that to enable the early disposition programs once developed by the council to be implemented.
I understand. I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out.
Reporting requirement, which we
well,
feel is
the idea is that more people recover, there should
the
be less cost
to all system players in the criminal justice.
Senator George had his hand up.
Early disposition programs, Mr.
I think we we could do better. And I think if we have the statute, we will do more.
Positive,
and it will be quicker.
Individual
we will save us money. We will get good outcomes.
Unfortunately,
the program, that's right.
People are in
so I would recommend that we pass this. And I know in principle that the Minnesota Attorneys Association supports quick disposition programs.
I don't think that was
that we haven't had a chance
bill.
To run the A5
but here we are in
amendments through the association.
Colleagues, so we have one other witness signed up for this. I noticed getting us back to the room.
Chair members of the subcommittee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Warden Counties.
I represented Bob Montgomery.
This is an issue on which the District Attorney
Association has a long distinguished career in the legislature and in public service.
AOC,
I welcome you,
the Indigent Defense Coordinator, who has been working now for several weeks.
May your room and enjoy seeing you in the building.
Unfortunately, when we get into the details of the issue, sometimes we miss the obvious things that the sponsor
would do. My lips are sealed.
Richard Burke has signed up to testify.
I
want to congratulate former Representative Montgomery on still having him here. Like a lot of us.
Providing for the interests of the state, protecting the interests of the defendant, and creating more expeditious.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, once again, as usual, I'm speaking on my own behalf and then rather than officially on behalf of
the neighborhood, Mr. Burke.
Good friend. I don't have a lot to add to what Don McDaniel said, but I want to stress a couple of points that I want brought out very succinctly. And what this is that we do not feel that the revenue impact statement reflects the fact that Senator George touched on, and that is that people may buy these policies when they're in their 40s and 50s and maintain them at a certain premium, but as their income falls a little bit, and they have increased expenses that they have to decide what to pay for. They decide to drop the premium because they know that the state will take care of them, and then bang, we're paying for that too. But the second issue I wanted to bring up was just the concept of encouraging and rewarding people taking responsibility for their own welfare. And we have a situation that Senator Ferriola touched on. I'm saying that we are rewarding these people for being responsible for their own health care. We're not rewarding these people who have been doing it all the time, not being induced by a new tax credit, but they've just been there before it was cool, so to speak. And I think that expanding it to these folks, too, will send a good message to all Oregonians as we age, because the population is aging. It'll encourage more people to get these plans, and then so the government will save money in the long run. So, as I said, I had very little to add to what Don McDaniel said, but I wanted to stress those particular points, and I thank you very much.
Your reading of the fines that they don't provide that the person will have on opportunity to cancel? It does.
Colleagues, we did not, thank you.
So you believe it does provide clear opportunity? Our concerns are that
there is your question.
You're comfortable with the dash A5 amendment
whether or not
provides for counsel for someone
with favorably in our referral.
Be subject to
a bill that I think
what we're calling
an important principle.
Early disposition.
And I think for expressed the principle well. Why do we treat taxpayers inequitably and differently in this issue?
I guess I do.
But it's just another $9
million.
Does
anybody have a good sense to run the
So what I'm going to do is close the public hearing, noting that we did not move the work session. The bill is still in this committee, still alive in this committee. I'm going to ask the co-chairs for their considerations of this issue, and I'll also remind the committee that as long as we have the bill, there's yet hope for some strategy to move it forward.
And I will commit to you that we won't let this bill croak. Ed,
you have the dubious honor, however, Representative Lowe, of having one of the very few remaining bills in this committee that has a relating clause relating to crime, which makes it a very important vehicle for this stage of the session.
So this would be the criminal history bill.
One might suggest that at our age. Any other questions for Mr. Houser before we let him stand down? Thank you, Mr. Houser. Now, Mr. Ratto and Brian DeLange and Mr. Frank Gross, if the three of you would
all of that investment is gone.
Senator, I think you bring up an interesting point.
I'm Brian Weissman. I'm here representing the Oregon Council.
We had an anticipated revenue impact
to be sitting next to these two gentlemen
in the bill that was passed in the 1999 legislature.
For this bill,
we have not had sufficient income tax filing to know what the revenue impact is. We look at a prospective situation of adoption of the tax credit for last session, and so now we have gone through a year, 2 years, we still don't know what the effect is financially. It would be interesting to see if the revenue projection were close to what the actuarial show us, what the actual filing would solve the bill. The other thing is that maybe that we just have bought ourselves some time to look at the possibility of strategy that might be.
I read an article. Annual verified statement of economic interest yet, Mr. Chair.
How long does it take to draw zero?
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot I was a Democrat for a minute. Thank you.
And we are at the end of session this morning.
I was in contact with Lee and also an officer out of the Detroit area. And since 1998, I've been working with both them. And most recently with Representative Kathy Lowe to get a bill, a similar bill, passed in the state of Oregon. The whole intent and purpose of this bill is to establish an Oregon law that would make it a crime for certain criminals, with few exceptions, to possess and or wear bulletproof vest, or for anyone to wear body armor in the commission of a crime. From my experience in law enforcement, not only in the state of Oregon, but in California as a full-time officer, this is a bill to me that only makes sense. Police officers wear body armor for a specific reason, that is to protect the lives of community members and their own lives. They're very recognizable. They have a specific function to perform. I believe citizens should also have the right to wear body armor, but I also believe that those committing crimes, those who have been convicted of certain crimes, do not have a need to wear body armor for obvious reasons. Again, I've been working on this since 1998. Officer Dave Rattle, who's going to testify next, has lended his support. And I have, I'm up to page 10 now of supporters from across the state. 10 pages of supporters that represent not only law enforcement agencies, law enforcement associations, but also private citizens. I actually have one convicted felon in there who endorses this law as well. So the law as it stands, I think, is a very good law that should be passed for not only the law enforcement community, but our communities as well. I was talking to my contact in California, the author of the California law, and many states now are in the process of establishing a similar, in fact, he's a similar law. In fact, he's working on a law at the federal level. He wanted to let me know that if we continue on the path we are going now with Oregon, we could be the fifth state in the nation to pass a law that I think, again, is a common sense law. And for our state, very proactive, again, for not only for law enforcement, but for the community as well. It just makes good sense.
Thank you, Mr. Grace. Mr. Ratto.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Officer Dave Ratto. I'm a member of the Oregon City Police Department, and I'm here also in support of this law. In 1995, I was involved in a situation in Oregon City at the intersection of Highway 213 and Washington Street. The individual that I confronted was wearing concealed, had concealed on him a bulletproof vest, and he was carrying two sidearms. There was a shootout involved, and I really, after all these years, can't put into words the feeling that you have, first of all, when you have to draw your gun and fire it at another human being. But when you're firing and hitting that human being and he's not flinching, then what goes through your mind is indescribable. This law would put a stop to that. I see nothing to hamper the passage of this. It not only protects the officers that are out protecting the citizens of this state, but it also protects the citizens. As police officers, we're responsible for every bullet that we fire. And in a shooting situation, we are also held responsible at some point in time for the bullets that the bad guys fire. If the bad guys are wearing bulletproof armor or hard body armor, or as in the case of Officer James Gelf in San Francisco, that felon also was wearing a bulletproof or a Kevlar helmet. Also had 3,000 rounds of ammunition, and I believe it was 6 or 7 assault weapons. You can imagine over a period of an hour that incident in San Francisco took place, how many bullets were fired into buildings, into cars, into apartment houses, all of that simply because the defendant, the felon, didn't fall when he was shot the first time by Officer Gelf. The need for this law is evident, and we're all intelligent people here, and fortunately most of you, and I hope most of you, will never have to confront a situation like I had to, because the aftermath stays with us to the point that sometimes we wish that we actually didn't survive the shootout. Surviving can be even worse. So if we can minimize the ability of people to own or possess these as not decent